previously on Get in the Mecca.
We're in a high-stakes battle here. We're against our biggest enemies, the biggest enemy of humanity, that is, the Titans. But one thing that I think is really, really smart is the fact that it tries to plan for the long term. And I think now we have this theme, this philosophical theme, has probably been one of my favorite themes in this show.
You are listening to the 12th episode of the JSM podcast, the anime and comic book podcast of which we take things one arc further. I like anime, I like comics, I like all those things in between, so I decided to make a show where I try and make sense of it all. In today's episode, as suggested by the title, we're talking about a song. But this is no ordinary song, this is the song of Attack on Titan 3rd Season Part 2. So today we are actually doing an OP analysis, and then after that I will proceed to do the Return to Shiganshina arc review. I'm really excited for this one, as there will be quite a few links with last episode, as well as the content of which I will be speaking about today. If you do get value from this episode, consider sharing it with a friend. And also consider leaving a review, it helps me a ton understand what I'm doing right and what I'm doing wrong. But without wasting any more time, here is the episode for this week. That is episode 12 of Get in the Mecca. The first thing to say for this, which is kind of obvious, is minor spoilers for the previous arcs of the show. So that is the Female Titan arc, the Battle of the Trost District arc, the Clash of the Titans arc, and the Uprising arc, as these are all incorporated and necessary to analyze this OP. Around now, I would probably be talking about the things I'll be focusing on and some of the main concepts that I think are really important. But instead for this episode, as the context of the show is so important, let's dive in with a plot summary. The Uprising arc has concluded. The new challenge at hand is mostly the loose ends of Season 2, the Clash of the Titans arc. We know that there has been somewhat of an alliance between the Beast Titan, the Colossal Titan, and the Armored Titan, also known as Zeke, Berthold, and Reiner. There have been multiple battles with both Berthold and Reiner, and now it's time for round 2 in the Return to Shiganshina arc. It's quite hard to say who really won in Season 2, but that doesn't matter now. What matters now is War Maria and the fate of humanity. The Beast Titan, Berthold, and Reiner are now putting up a final stand to take care of humanity and the Scouts Regiment by taking them down once and for all at the final wall that humanity needs to secure partially their fate. Everything comes down to this. Every battle, every life, and everything leading up to this moment is now in front of us on screen. The Beast Titan, Berthold, and Reiner saga concludes right here, right now, in Shiganshina. I think that in brief summarizes what is at stake here. All these events have come together in one of the most important locations of the show, Shiganshina. You have to note that the fall of Shiganshina took place with Berthold and Reiner, and now they meet several years later, all grown up, including not only Berthold Reiner or the Armored Titan and the Colossal Titan, but Eren Jaeger, Mikasa, and Armin all collide almost as if this is a fated battle, and we see that very much in the OP as well as the show. The OP does seem to make the area appear as very dark, which I will go into, it does seem quite grisly. But if we move that to one side, I think it's just the very location that is super important. It's a return to something that we've seen and are very familiar with. But in fact, it's the fact that it's in a different context. Contexts is something that I will have to go very deep into in today's episode. My first point when it comes to this OP is how it differentiates itself from others, and that has been a bit of a hot topic when we talk about this OP. I know a lot of people say the same thing when it comes to this very opening, but I'll give you my take on it. The first very thing that should be talked about, I think, is how this contrasts to the different ones, and to some extent it doesn't. This OP sounds very much like some of the former OPs, such as Tsusageyo and OP1 and OP2, OP2 being my favourite OP, not really Red Swan, and I'll go into that, but it's nice to know that those have come together. I know that was the source of criticism when it came to this opening, that it sounds very much like the other Linked Horizon openings. But I think that's the point. That sounds quite blunt, but I think that is the point, because the thing is, as I mentioned before, these are events that have all culminated together through time. They have very much resonated throughout the show. These oppositions between the Beast Titan, Berthold Reiner, and our scout side have all boiled up for this very moment, and why not signify that through the music as well as the show? By bringing together the sound signatures of OP1, OP2, OP3, it sounds somewhat familiar, and if you want to read even deeper into that, compare that very much to the familiarity. I almost stumbled on that, but consider that when it comes to Shiganshina. Shiganshina is a place that needs no sort of introduction. We've seen Shiganshina loads of times in the opening arcs, and we are simply returning to it, so that is something that should be considered. It's that music is made to reiterate that sort of feeling, and why not do that within its OP? Make it feel familiar, because this is supposed to be a familiar setting, and just with different contexts. Another thing that should be addressed though is, why does this sound familiar? And you're probably like, yeah, I just said that. But I think there is more to talk about when it comes to this area. If we consider the other openings, they very much have a similar feeling. A feeling similar to a national anthem. I know it was very much talked about and kind of memed but not memed that Attack on Titan OP1 is the arguable national anthem of anime. I don't know if I agree, but I can see it happening. Similarly to OP2 and OP3, there is a sense of a national anthem, and the question is, what is a national anthem supposed to do? It's made to prop up the nature of that country or location, and that can be kind of dubbed as propaganda. The thing about this OP is that it sounds very much like that, so I automatically leap to the thought that this is, again, a sort of inspiring, motivational piece similar to what the soldiers or the scouts would listen to, as it very much puts them in the light that they are correct in combat and they are almost the good guys here. But that's when I think you have to rethink things, and that is mostly because this OP, as much as it does seem like that, underneath that layer, it really isn't. In fact, it's a twisted song of propaganda or a twisted national anthem. And I think that leads me nicely into some mini lyrical analysis. If you remember from episode 5, I think it was, Mastery of the Speech, I discussed about fatalist philosophy slightly and how Owen approaches things, the OP kind of takes from that, but before that episode. The reason why I haven't said the name of the opening as of now is simply for the purpose of making this point. The name of this OP is, in English, I'm not going to try and butcher the name in Japanese, it is Path of Aspirations and Corpses. Think about that. You're probably not thinking about it, but think about that. If we link that to what we were talking about in episode 5, it links or synergizes so nicely. The idea that we have to head straight into our deaths and take such a risk as it is almost inevitable, or there's a component of inevitability to that, synchronizes itself so nicely with this name and this OP in general, as it is a path of corpses, literally. The aspirations part also links quite nicely to what we were talking about then as well, as that aspiration, I think, would refer mostly to the legacy aspects of Irwin's or philosophy, or speech at least. His meaning or aspirations are passed onto those who continue living for him. Another part that I think was really, really good when it came to lyrics was imagery to do with the devil, and I know when you hear that straight away it's a bit alarming. It isn't really that alarming. Another line that I think was really good was, "The devil whispered sweetly." Already we get a contrast between the devil and sweetly, and even whispering being a gentle action. Again, it's to do with the synergies. It's the entire idea or concept of heading into an inevitability, or heading into the darkness, if you will. We have to embrace the very fears that we have and just go straight into the danger, as we simply have no other option. As I said, an inevitability is at stake here. When it comes to whispering and sweetly, as I said before, it's the contrast there. I don't know if I can read that deep and say what that really implies. Maybe it's a thing to the temptation, but I'm not so sure. Or maybe something just came to me. Maybe it's to do with risk, and the risk of taking back Walmaria comes at a very large cost, being human life and Eren even and his well-being, if we look forward to collecting the Nine and all of those other things. Before we head into some more analysis, while I'll be speaking a bit about the repetition of imagery, let's go to a break, and by a break, I don't mean a commercial break, in fact, I mean Link the VA. In the Link the VA segment, what I like to do is take a voice actor from the show which we're speaking about, in this case, a voice actor from Attack on Titan, and look at the various roles they played, compare them to the role that they're playing in this anime, and kind of just have a good time with it. So without further ado, here is the Link the VA segment for this week. In this week's edition of Link the VA, I had a good time, I'll be honest, I had a really good time. This week we're talking about Marco. I know Marco doesn't feature in the OP whatsoever, but they did him so dirty in this season. And I think I'll forget about him in our review arc of Attack on Titan. So I think it's best that I give him some spotlight for today's episode. The reason why I said I had such a good time was that he plays almost every harem protagonist. Okay, maybe not every harem protagonist. However, there were about 3 shows that I've watched, one of which I'm watching right now. He voice acts that very character. And that is scary. I don't know how he does it. I don't know how that worked, but it worked. So let's talk about Marco. The voice actor for Marco and the other roles of which I will be talking about in this edition is Ryoka Osaka. The first role that I want to speak about, okay, maybe some side roles. Mark from JoJo's Part 2, someone in Your Lie in April, and now the main ones, okay. The first one being from Oreshura. Oreshura, meaning my childhood friend and my girlfriend fight too much, is a harem basically that is self-explanatory to what I was saying. It follows, okay, spoilers for Ode Shura. It follows the life of this boy called Iita. Iita is the harem protagonist, of which is being voice acted. And what happens in summary is that the quote-unquote girlfriend that's described in this fakes being his girlfriend for the purpose of saving her popularity, or the fact that she is being asked out all the time. And evidently, the childhood friend is always jealous of other girls. Standard harem script here. The reason that I'm so surprised is, as this is being recorded, I'm watching that right now and I'm having a decent time. It's okay. It does feel a tiny bit on the more forced side. Iita, I would say, is one of the better characters in the show, but I don't think it's the characters, I just think it's the entire flow of the show in general. I think Iita's a nice character, and kudos to Ryoka Osuka for that. Second role, another harem, Bokuben, or Bokutachi wa Benkyou ga Dekinai, also known as We Never Learn. Spoilers for this one as well, this is a tutoring harem. Mr. Osaka plays Naruyuki from Bokuben, and okay, the premise for this show, I'm gonna end up in every length of EA segment talk about show premises for shows that I'm absolutely passionate about or just been watching recently. But anyway, the plot summary or the lowdown is basically that there's this boy, he has not very much money, but wants to get a recommendation for a very top school. He has the brains for it, and therefore the school waves that right in his face. But in order to get that, he must tutor about two girls in his class. It eventually expands as the series goes on, as harem magically goes. So he has to balance tutoring them. They kind of like him. He kind of likes them. And kaboom, yeah. So that is Bokuben in summary. Reason I like it, I like Naruyuki in general. The show can get really comedic. And that was one of the reasons why I slightly prefer this show over its sort of predecessor. And when I say predecessor, I mean the quintessential quintuplets. And that was a tutoring harem from the winter season. I kind of preferred it, and the reason why I like Naruyuki is just, it was a real treat to see his comedic side come out, and there were many scenes, although very cliche, you could tell that the VA was very passionate about it. I really just enjoyed the dynamic between them, especially when they were all excited or flustered, especially those scenes with Kurisu and Furuhashi, all of them to be fair. I just think that was a really nice role to watch grow. Just watch the VA or listen to the VA just love the role. Well, that is what I could imply anyway. Final role. The final role of which I'll be speaking about is Nejima from Koito Uso. Nejima is, okay, I'm gonna say this again, tiny slash minor spoilers for Koito Uso. Nejima is kind of just the average guy, but somehow, and because the government's weird because they want people to marry because of low birth rates, he gets like the best girls to somehow like him, or they just happen to like him, if we take Takahashi in that show. For this show, it's less about the role and more about just how I thought about the show, and the show just brings back loads of memories. I'll be honest, as this is showing, I like harem anime, and okay, this anime is considered slightly more love triangle romance-ish, but it's basically a harem in sheep's clothing. Well, not really, because it's quite blatant, but anyway, I just loved having a lot of fun with that show. It's not the best show in the world, and I'll be honest, maybe I do like harem ironically, but I had so much fun with this show. Maybe because it was one of my earlier harem experiences or romance anime experiences, so I just had a good time mocking it and having a good time. Visually, it actually does look very nice and has a banging OP being Kanashi. I believe there was a time where Kanashi and Sasagio had like this battle for the season. Koito Uso is a great time despite it being quite meh, but I still think the Nejima as a voice was still quite enjoyable to watch. I don't have any complaints. I don't think it was the standout, but who cares about my opinion? Let's end the Link the VA segment here. I will see you next time on Link the VA. Let's get back to Attack on Titan. Back to the show. Now all the harem anime imagery is out my system, let's talk about actual imagery here. The imagery of this OP, similarly to the sound signature, draws across multiple OPs, and I would mostly take that from OP1 and OP2. OP4 is kind of the exception, but I will go into OP4 a bit more in detail later. The short answer for what I'm going to say is this imagery contributes to the idea of a familiar place and a familiar place with different contexts. That's the short answer. The long answer will be that it draws from OP2 when it comes to the crow imagery or the bird imagery alongside the setting that is OP1. I'll talk quickly about the crows. Around the 3/4 mark, if I'm not mistaken, there is a scene of which you have two birds, just like OP2, two birds going into what seems to be the sun, or at least the sunset for that matter, ahead of the walls. The first distinction to be made is simply the color of the birds. You have white and blue in OP2, however you have black in OP5. Yes, you could say they're different birds, however I think that's not really the focus. The colors kind of just have different connotations in general. Black I don't associate with good things, almost like how I would with something like white and blue. If we add that to the tone of the OP, it kind of feels more hopeful in OP2 that we're going out for a challenge if we take the female titan arc, as that was the arc of which that OP was set in. But if we think about the context of OP5 being a conclusive one, and the fact that we have a sunset and these black birds going into the sunset, that has a very different message, although it is effectively a reshaded or slightly altered scene. If anything, it's almost the same thing, but has a very different meaning because of the fact that OP5 is supposed to be conclusive. I think the return to Shiganshina arc, as much as it is conclusive, I kind of feel like it's the end of the beginning. It's the end of the first half of Attack on Titan. Yes, it's not directly halfway. Halfway would probably be the Uprising arc or the Clash of the Titans arc. But I kind of feel like Shiganshina is halfway as of the fact that it concludes the very events of the return to Shiganshina and everything that happened in Clash of the Titans, female titan, kind of, okay, maybe not female titan, the Battle of the Trost District arc, and partially the Uprising arc, all of that has come together for that very moment. And why not symbolize such beautiful ideas through such imagery? When it comes to the fights as well, that is made very clear. The battle between Eren and Reiner is kind of reiterated, similarly to the 1v1 combat of which they had in the Clash of the Titans arc. It's made to look almost like a parallel, almost like when you go on Twitter and you see all those parallels for the MCU, if you're in the MCU fandom, you see sort of like Iron Man 1, Iron Man 2, Iron Man 3, Endgame parallels or all of those things. Some of them are a stretch, but I don't think this one is a stretch. In fact, I think it's very accurate of that 1v1 nature within the fight, which kind of just comes together. I've said come together a million times today. It all meets together, I'm changing my vocabulary, to create this feeling that it's a round two. It's a moment to settle the score between the two of them. It's the time to end these conflicts which have been going on for quite a while now. Although our sense of time is kind of weird in Attack on Titan, I'll be honest, that's not really anyone's fault. But the sense of time is a bit weird there. However, I think you can infer to a certain extent that it has been a decent while in terms of a fight since the two have fought. If we keep riding this wave of repetitive imagery, the same applies to the rock imagery from Sasagio and the rock imagery within OP5. Honestly, the flying rock scene in Sasagio, although Clash of the Titans arc I have quite a few problems with, and I'll explain that in my review when we eventually get to that. That is probably one of the best animated parts of Attack on Titan. The flow between the hand grab and Them on the horses and him turning into a titan, it's all so smooth for that very scene of which he fights Reiner, in the OP that is, or meets slash confronts Reiner. Repeating that scene to an extent, not to the greatness that was OP3, Sasageyo, but I do think it is somewhat of a homage, and also a contrast in a way. A contrast in the way that the vibes are quite different. The vibe, or the feel that is OP3, is kind of one of, yes, confrontation, but also one of risk. And okay, risk is also an OP5, but it felt more daring. I think OP5 makes it seem more tactical, but also somewhat of a blunder, almost as if they are heading to their deaths, which they did do in Third Season Part 2. The slow motion and the lyric "The Devil Whispered Sweetly" or "Softly" kind of links together to make it seem somewhat more eerie. It's a slower section of the song, it's not hyper. The tempo isn't in the league of OP3. So as I've said many times, I think contexts are very much morphed. And that leads me nicely, yeah, I know I'm always using these horrible segues, but let's slightly segue to OP4. OP4, Red Swan, and OP5, I would say, are almost polar opposites. Imagery-wise, when it comes to the skies, one of which is about purity and truth, almost, which you can see within that bright blue sky and those lovely watercolors, is contrasted very much to the darkness of OP5. One of the words which came to my head when it came to OP5 was sort of toxic or corrupted. The last time we saw Shiganshina, even in quite a bad time, which was the Battle of the Trost District arc within the OP, it still seemed relatively bright, or at least on Earth. OP5 just distorts that completely and has no connection to that. It seems almost as if it's somewhere else, it's otherworldly, with that very green sky, or green lighting or grade, if you will. OP4 as well doesn't give or bring that vibe of propaganda. In fact, it seems very transparent in the way that it is quite a simple song. Red Swan also doesn't take the route of creating somewhat of a propaganda-esque feel, making it seem somewhat more authentic and truthful, as the Uprising arc is very much about half of the truth, which is the politics of Eldia, or the world that they live in at the moment, or at least the world that is exposed to them. That is quite different to OP5. OP5 does take the idea of propaganda, but like I said before, it seems kind of like a corrupted national anthem, or in fact, a twisted one. I think that is most of my rant over for this week. We will go to some closing thoughts soon, but firstly, let's go to the In The Moment segment. If you are new here, the In The Moment segment is very simple. I just talk about what I've been reading and watching in the moment or as of recent. First thing I want to talk about is how I've been progressing on watching and understanding Neon Genesis Evangelion. 2 episodes, I think it was, we spoke about the prologue arc of NGE 1995, looking at what it had to offer when it came to cinematography, the Hedgehog Dilemma, Dementia anime, etc. But recently I've kind of wanted to take it a step further, and no, that is not cosplaying as Asuka, I'm not that shameless, okay? What it actually was actually looking a bit deeper into Eva, and I'm not gonna try and sound cocky here, but I think I, on at least a base level, understand Eva. I know there are some people that come up Evangelion and just say, what the heck was that? I think I do understand it beyond that, as I've watched it basically 1.5 times and done a decent amount of research on it. But I decided to take it a bit further, and I wanted to understand more some of the things that underlie even, that is the philosophy. So recently I've been reading Freud. Freud being what is known as the master of psychoanalysis, if you will. There's also a YouTube series that I will, if I remember, put in the show notes, that is Eva Sophie. It's a great series, breaking down some of the philosophy. It's about the same length of my episodes. I would highly recommend it. This isn't some cross promotion or anything. I just really learned a lot from it, so I would love to share that with you guys. So Freud and psychoanalysis are two very big parts of EVA and the philosophy that underlie EVA, notably the death drive and a few other things which I'm still trying to get my head around. Hopefully with all this research I can give you guys some greater Evangelion content that goes deeper than just base level and my understanding of it, although I do strive to give you guys my honest takes on Evangelion from what I understand, but as you can tell by now, and I'll just disclose right now, I am no expert. Second thing, I've been watching Oreshura, as I said, in English that is my girlfriend and childhood friend. I think I got it in the wrong order. My childhood friend and girlfriend fight too often. Recently, in general, I've been watching loads of harem. I'm having a decent time with it, no more than sort of any average harem. I think the most fun I've had with a harem recently has been Bakuben, Quintessential Quintuplets or Quints, and then Seikano. I had so much fun with that, but I also found it really emotional. Oreshura isn't emotional. Or to me personally, it's not very emotional. You have, spoilers, you have a middle schooler making fun of a high schooler at one point, and yeah, that is possible, but if you watch it, it wasn't very interesting, or just not very thought out, in my opinion. Oreshura isn't bad, it's just okay from what I've seen. Maybe it will pick up. Another harem that I recently finished that kind of grinded my gears, or just made me really annoyed, was Masamune-kun no Revenge, or Masamune's Revenge. The premise of the show is that there's this girl, there's a boy, as usual. They knew each other when they were young. He kind of lost weight because he was fat then. And then she doesn't remember for a time, but kind of remembers. And he kind of got rejected when he was younger by her. I don't know why he was looking to go out with her anyway. They're kind of rich, so why not? This is going on for too long. But then it's his job, or his mission, to get with her and then break her heart. It's a stupidly long explanation. I tried explaining it via text at one point and it just went awfully wrong. Masamune-kun no Revenge annoys me mostly because it's an open ending, kind of baits you into a second season, and overall it's kind of boring. Not boring in the way that there isn't a bit of drama because they try to create that, but I would say the main character, or who is described as some sort of evil queen, so the girl in this case, she was so good at the beginning, and then not by the end, but kind of a few minutes into the show, she kind of just loses that mean personality. Okay, she does kind of maintain it, but overall, I'm trying to make excuses here for other reasons why I don't like it. It is kind of a guilty pleasure-esque type of anime. I just couldn't enjoy it. That's what I'm trying to say. Also been reading a bunch of Tower of God recently, as I said before, just trying to get into those greater arcs like Workshop Battle Arc and all the other ones that I don't know the name of. I'm having a good time with it. Can't wait to see anime adaptation. I think I'm running out of things to say, so let us end this week's In the Moment segment. Also, this is a good time for me to sell out. If you do get value from the show, consider leaving a review. Share it with a friend to get the word out there also. Also, you can follow me on Twitter to get your updates. That is at GettingTheMecha. M-E-C-H-A for Mecha, as you anime fans should know. I post my ultra short reviews on there. I have a lot of fun on Twitter. Generally, you can talk to me about anime. I am open. And finally, if you want to get these episodes as soon as they come out, because the thing is, when I do upload, I have to put them on slightly early so they get to your services on time, or if you just want to get them as quick as possible, consider subscribing to the show on your podcast app so you get a nice lovely notification for when they do come out. But for now, that is it for the In the Moment segment. So, closing thoughts on OP5. Shingeki no Kyojin, or Attack on Titan's 5th opening, is my favourite opening in the show. One of the reasons for that is just all the imagery and the idea of bringing things together. I think that very idea is the most important part to me. It was something kind of that I was referring to when I was talking about Dark Days of the Forge recently, and that is about creating with intention. I think there is a tendency sometimes for the audience, or really keen members of the audience, to read into things slightly too deep. Maybe I'm not the keen type of audience, but I would definitely say that maybe I do read into things too far. But I also do think there is, to an extent, an urge for not only writers, but cinematographers and animators, and people in the team in general, to create things with intention and not only just do things to please fans, but create something that feels whole. I know I'm slightly on the waffly side here today, but I love when teams go out to create something that is so rich with meaning and full of passion. It understands what it's done previously, not only in the OP, but also within the show and throughout it, and also what is going to happen within this part of the show. I've heard people say that there are a lot of spoilers in this OP, but I don't think that's what it's all about. I think part of it is the process. If we take Erwin's quote-unquote philosophy and ideas, the simple clash between these titans and people, all of that has made this season very special, and the OP does the very same thing. I can only pray that Linked Horizon does make the OP for the final season of Attack on Titan, but even if they don't, I am very happy that I have this OP analysed and that I've actually listened to it and enjoyed it. In all honesty, it has made the spring season one to really enjoy. Although, to be honest, I do think the spring season was slightly on the drier side, this OP has really made it shine for me. Overall, I think third season part two just shows that they have their heads strapped on and are ready for everything that comes after it. As I said, this is a conclusive season, or at least a conclusive arc, so bringing everything together is a nice homage to wrap all that content up and prepare for the future, that is, the final season of Attack on Titan. Thank you for listening to this episode of the JTN Podcast. That was episode 12. Hopefully you do like OP analyses like this. I know it's a bit hard because we're not playing the music, although you can find those in the show notes alongside the sources that I look at. Yeah, I know it is a bit hard, but I'm trying to make it a good one which still has loads of analysis and is still something that is fun to listen to. Just to shed some light on our journey through Attack on Titan, we've penciled out the OP for this season, and I've also done my own speech analysis. The next time I do talk about Attack on Titan, it will definitely be an overall review of third season part 2, and then we will wrap up third season part 2 for a long time, as I'm getting tired of it. I don't know if you're getting tired of it. And then we will kind of work backwards up to the Uprising arc, analyzing each and every, or most arcs that I enjoyed. And then after that, we will work backwards through most of the arcs of the show. We will talk about those all in individual episodes alongside the Shiganshina arc. But just wanted to relay that information. Have a lovely week, guys, and I will see you hopefully in the next one. Goodbye. The music in this production goes as follows: Difference by Chasers Gaming, Go Lucky by Chasers Gaming, Chipscape by Chasers Gaming, Mandatory Overtime by Joth, Anomaly by Eric Medeas under soundimage.org, The Inspector Arrives by Eric Medeas under soundimage.org.